If you don't have the breath component, you can't control your pace. I'm going to translate that. If you can breathe well, you can control your pace. And whether you got a 5-year goal, a 10-year goal, you're going to need gas in the tank to get her done. It's, again, it's not the external struggle that gets us. It's the internal struggle that gets us. People can become quite flexible and resilient majorly. And that's reflected, of course, in the story that we tell ourselves. And so, you know, a lot of why people throw in the towel is because their story's working against them. I know what story I have to maintain to get this thing done in order for me to die well.
I'm Kimberly Kesting, health and lifestyle coach, obsessed with words and magic, and I'm here to lead an evolution of the coaching industry with the Enlifted Method.
I'm Mark England, language nerd, professional coach and speaker, and I'm the co-founder and head coach of Enlifted.
At Enlifted, we've helped hundreds of coaches quiet the imposter syndrome, feel even more confident, and make a massive impact with their clients.
By helping them unlock the power of these two things, their words and their mindset.
Now it's your turn. Time to get Enlifted. Mark, how long have you been teaching and coaching on the exact same thing?
17 years.
17 years and how many days? You know, let's get specific if we're getting specific.
We're pushing, I started January 17th, 2007. So what's today?
April 19th. Oh, that's April pretty 19th. Good math. That's...
Let's just say 4 months. 17 years and 4 months. Full time. Flat out.
Talking about words.
Relentlessly.
And how many times did you consider giving up that passion craft?
Never been asked that question before. It's the first time I've ever asked that question. So what I'm doing right now is I'm strolling down memory lane. And we're not talking about the inevitable L's on the path or the frustrations or the times you take out, you put in, I wake up and I don't feel like doing it. Okay. Taking all that out. Never. Not even close.
How many times do you think that your peers or people that you've worked with have had that same experience as in never wanting to give up what they do?
I'd say a few of them. A handful. There's going to be less of them in that category, I think, than more of them in that category, just because I know how single-minded you have to be to be able to do that.
Yeah. I would say it's incredibly rare. I don't know somebody else personally that is does the way that you do with like a little bit of touch of the tism, as Theo Vaughn would say.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't either.
He's obsessed.
I have a condition.
Yeah, IHAC for
and,
short.
And here's the thing. In one sense, a very real sense, I can't take credit for it. It's like, what? Attraction's not a choice. You can't talk yourself into being attracted to someone. You can't talk yourself out of being attracted to something. Someone. You can't talk yourself into being interested in something. The shit just, it's held my attention the whole time. And I know we're going to do a podcast at some point in time about identity. And identity and commitment go hand in hand. In one sense. And so, you know, when I was able to recognize this thing for what it was, I didn't know what it was going to turn into when I saw it for the first time in 2003 or when I put my flyer up and went pro January 17, 2007. All I knew that it was cool as shit and I wanted to do it. Now, the amount of times we can retrofit that question. The amount of times I've said, where in the holy hell does this energy come from to do this work like I do for as long as I have? And that's not going anywhere. It's like, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I noticed myself, so we're on group 40, 41, 42, 43 right now. And those classes, those stories, you've been on how many certs in and out? Like a ton. Mm-hmm. And I get more and more excited to teach those classes as they proceed, even though I know them like the back of my hand. The energy gets more childlike in a sense and playful and it gets fresher. That's the word I'm looking for. This thing has gotten fresher for me as it proceeds. That boggles my mind. Like,
yeah, it's incredibly unique. It's interesting to me. Like the reason that I asked you that question was because you're the example of the exact opposite of what we're talking about today. which is the topic of the show, is how often people throw in the towel when things get tough and how difficult it can be to stay committed to your craft or stay committed to a relationship or stay committed to a creative project or stay committed to just really anything that you find worthwhile as a pursuit in your life. And one of the things, like, I'm glad that you brought up identity, because one of the first things that I've noticed and observed amongst my peers, the way I got to this idea for the show topic today, was I realized, like, I'm looking around at my peers and I've been in the coaching game for 7 years. My role within the coaching arena has changed a few different times. I started out in nutrition coaching and health coaching. I got progressively better at that. And I realized, oh, mindset is such a critical piece of this conversation. And then I met you and I started learning the Enlifted method, and I started radically changing my coaching practice, like not necessarily who I was working with. I was able to get just such better results because I could shift the mindset and the story. And then I took on this identity of podcast host. And somewhere along the path, I took a detour in coaching roaming classes. And I've done a lot within the coaching space, but I have looked around at many of my peers who I saw and started in this game with. And a lot of them have thrown in the towel. They've stopped. They've gone back to doing something else. They've, like, you know, left the industry entirely. Or I look at even some of my mentors and I see the same thing. So people who I looked up to in the beginning of getting started, people I learned from, and people who I, or maybe I didn't even directly learn from, but just was, like, aware of that they were in the space of teaching and leading, and many of them have disappeared. And so I saw something recently where it was like one more person that I saw just oop out of the game. And I was like, that's interesting to me because I see it through a totally different lens now, understanding identity and story. And so, I mean, what, like, from your experience too, like, what do you see? Because you teach coaches, you teach entrepreneurs, you teach people who are front and center in this game of, like, they have to be the one to get themselves to do the thing. So what do you see in the coaching sessions that you do, or in just the conversations with our students, that causes them to hit this breaking point of, you know what, no, it's too tough, I'm just going to leave? And whether that's, like, we can talk about this in the lens of business, we could talk about this in relationships, we could talk about this in a job, or, like, maybe if, like, you have a goal to write a book and you just can't get it across the finish line, like, what is that? What's going on here?
Well, I adjusted my question about 2 years ago with the coaches, and I used to ask them, you know, how's your coaching going? And some people would say, I would get all kinds of answers. Oh, it's really good. I'm busy. You know, I'm doing more workshops now, or, you know, I've scaled it back a bit, or, you know, I've changed the client that I want to work with, or I've stopped, or, you know, I'm taking a break for the next 6 months. And I was like, you know, there's a better question to be asked here. And I don't ask our coaches about their coaching anymore. I ask them about their practice.
Good word.
Yeah. Because that is an accurate way to describe what we teach people to do. And there's a saying in the fight game that a fighter lives and dies in their own mind. And it's the same thing with a coach. A coach lives and dies in their own mind. And so someone cannot coach for 2 years. And if they keep their practice alive of plucking out soft talk, they're in the arena. Okay. That's one thing that comes to mind. So framing the thing accurately, because we teach coaches how to coach with this stuff. And from a more zoomed out perspective, we're teaching people the path of the abracadabra. And that's something that hopefully will stay alive in someone's mind as an active practice, an active path, whether they're helping other people with their words and stories and breath or not.
And Mark, wait a second here. This is my first time listening to the Get Lifted podcast. What are you teaching magic classes?
By definition, yes. So the definition of magic is the ability to apparently alter the course of events using supernatural forces. It's not the ability to alter the course of events using supernatural forces. It's the apparent ability to do it. And when someone can simplify their story, very rarely do things get better when things get complicated. When someone can simplify their story, and this, to a good degree, I've done this, you know, with how it's as dynamic as you're going to find of a lens to see this work, my work through our work. I'll elaborate that in a second. Yeah. So when someone is able to use their words to stay focused on what's important, keep the drama down and build themselves up in their imagination and also in a self-image and create the right kind of energy and be a good listener. Like if you want to do something significant, other people are going to be involved. And the way you use your words directly influences your ability to listen to those people and pay attention to those people, also known as relationships. And that's very important. So when someone's able to do that with their words and keep it in place for a long enough period of time for the things to happen that they want to happen, it will look like magic to the uninitiated, to the uneducated, to the person who thinks, oh, you know, it doesn't matter what you say, you know, or they're just words.
Or thoughts.
Yeah, or thoughts, you know.
How can my thoughts really influence all of this stuff that's happening around me?
Yeah. Yeah. So I really have, and then I've got some notes on some of the other reasons why people, you know, throw in the towel. But as far as my approach is concerned, and I'm so thankful, grateful, appreciative, all the words of what Enlifted has given me. It's hard to put it into words, and I'll give it a shot. So I really have, there's some goals in between. I have a 50-year goal. I'm going to do this work for 50 years. Okay, so that's stretching out as far
Which, who the heck has that? Like, I mean,
I've had that goal.
As long as I've known you, you've had that goal.
Yeah, it's been in my calendar the whole time too. January in 2017, when I got off today, I decided, and I've locked it in place. And then also my lifestyle plays a part of that. And so I've got this very long-term goal is to do it for 50 years. And then my immediate short-term goal is to get up every day and kick a bunch of ass with it. It's like, and so when I do those two things, I've got the thing out there as far as it can go in a normal human's lifespan. And now, today, one of my favorite words is today, not one day, today. And if I keep those things married together, it's like two magnets in mm-hmm. a sense that creates this levity and then you can move it. It's just, I love what it does for me. I've been running that dynamic. Yeah. Bookends for a very long time. And it's one of the reasons I, you know.
It's like a race, like a start line and a finish line.
Yeah.
And, you know, mile markers along the way.
Yeah. So, you know, is that all I got to do? We play those language games. It's been about a year since we've done them, but we would do them in the 90 minutes of awesome group work stuff. And it's like, list everything you're going to do in the next 90 minutes. So we still do them. And it would be group work sessions in the Enlifted community where everybody would get together, be 30, 40 people on a call, and would work on who cares what for 90 minutes. And so everybody lists what they're going to do. And then you tack on, is that all I got to do? And so I do the same thing. I'm going to do this work for 50 years. Is that all I got to do? I'm going to wake up to this morning and pour damn near everything I've got into this thing for the day. Is
Which
that
is
all I
got
to do?
Two pots of Folgers coffee.
Depending. What am I fueled by? Caffeine, chaos, and cuss words?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly. There's an actual pen that has that.
Yeah. Really got that. Shout outs to Pens in the Park, my favorite pens. So yeah, so really like this whole conversation, right? It's like-
And then I've got low standards in one sense. I've got very low standards. Very
low standards for what?
Me, in one sense.
What do you mean by that?
I'm prepared to live under a bridge to do this work.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
Tell them because they don't have regular conversations with you like this. This is like, they're like, what, that he wants to live under a bridge?
No, it's not that I want to. It's just I would. I would rather live on a pile of mulch and get up and do this work every day than get a 9-to-5 to make 85K a year so I could have what most people would consider to be the things they need to feel safe and secure and connected. Like that shit doesn't mean fucking shit to me. I can also, my dad did well. I grew up with money. I can play that game too. Anything in between. Like my lifestyle is designed to, it's mission centric.
Which is great for the rest of us because both Adam and I prefer the Maverick Yacht lifestyle.
If we keep doing this, which we will, that's going to happen. Okay. And I look forward to, you know, having fun with you all on the Maverick Yachts. And like, so that leads into why some people throw in the towel is because they have, And it all comes down to what their values are, what means more to them. And if coaching doesn't mean that much to somebody, then fucking throw in the towel. Who cares? Okay. I don't expect coaching to mean as much to anyone as it does to me. I don't expect that. Okay. Or at least the way it does to me. And you know what we're actually seeing in the community? People are getting bit by the bug.
Well, this is something that I'm seeing. And again, like I start this conversation from a place of looking around at my peers and realizing that, you know, we have a practice of celebrating wins with the Unlifted method. And I celebrate my own wins all the time. I mean, today we just set up this bougie podcast studio in my office. It looks really cool, really sleek. Like this is a new level of production. This is a new level of a statement of leadership. This is a new level of visibility, all the things, right? And 2 weeks ago when we recorded the first episode of this podcast and you and I were here setting it up on our own, Adam came in and just set up all this. He knows this stuff.
This is his world.
This is like, he gets it. And when you and I set it up, how long did it take me to futz around with things where I was getting frustrated? I was getting annoyed. I was like, screw this. Cause I don't know how to do this. The first time I was doing like setting up that setup for us and, you know, I had my outburst moments. And then it was the conversation of like, well, you know what? Like this means something to me and I want it to look as good as it can look with the skills that I have. I'm going to figure this out. Mm-hmm. And I look at many other places in my life where I've operated similarly, which is to say that I've, you know, cared enough about the result to put into the work, to make the commitment, to develop myself and to move forward in it. But then I look around at my peers or friends or people on the internet or whatever, and I see this pattern within people where it's just really difficult for them to stick to the thing. And no matter how passionate they are about it or like how much perceived passion they have somewhere, oh yeah, well, it just got really tough to do that. Or, you know, it's just like, I just couldn't make enough money. Or, oh yeah, that guy was cool. And like, I was totally in love with him, but like, man, he was just a little weird. And like, then it kind of, you know, and it's like, people are just willing to like this fast, like onto the next that we see in our culture right now, a lot of options. And therefore, like, there's probably something better for me rather than committing themselves to something and realizing how that by committing to it could make it better for you by going all in, right? I mean, how much better year over year has this experience gotten for you from year one to year 17?
It's exponential. It's exponential. And I'm seeing other people respond very positively to it because you know where I stand when it comes to this stuff and you know what's going to happen with this stuff. And I'm watching other people do same thing, similar. Jason Turner, he's going on a rampage with this stuff. He hasn't even graduated level one yet. He just sent me a text this morning.
Love that guy.
Capital letters, obsessed.
I knew that was going to happen to him.
There's something about the abracadabra and especially the way.
It's the simplicity. It's the effectiveness.
It's the realness. You know real magic when you see it.
And like, you can't argue it.
You're right.
There's no point. There's literally no way to argue the shifts that you will create for yourself and with your clients simply by changing your configuration of words. Like it just.
I used to think, it's been years since I thought this. And you know, truth be told, you know, when in 2017 and when I committed to 50 years, I was like, I mean, I said it and I meant it. And part of me was like, in the back of my head, is like, you really going to do that?
A little imposter syndrome?
Well, it's just lack of track record syndrome. I didn't have any. So it's like celebrating the wins in lifted affirmations. One of the reasons in lifted affirmations work so damn well is because we've gone and got the evidence to base their existence off of. That might be a little bit techie for everybody, but whatever. And so I'd never done that before. I'd never committed to something like that before. So I was like, okay, well, you know what, dude, you're going to find out. And I have no question about that now. I answered that in a couple of years. Like that voice.
Yeah. Once you
dissolved.
Had the evidence. Yeah.
Once that radar lock on the thing and the energy, it stayed. It wasn't like I got more committed. It was just, oh, now like, you are serious about this. And I mean, I was talking about when I first started writing the original blueprint for Core Language Upgrade, it was like year two. And one of my clients asked for a couple of pointers. because they were leaving. I only worked with people in person, and then, you know, they're in and out in a week. I was like, yeah, I can write a couple of paragraphs. And so I sent them an email, and then I'm like, well, shit, if I'm going to say that, I need to see this. And then now you got four paragraphs. Now four paragraphs turned into a page. And when it hit a page, I saw the next 30 years of my life. I didn't have the extra 20, but whatever, 30, 50, who cares? I saw the next 30 years. I'm absolutely serious.
It I know you are.
Flashed before my eyes, living in a hut, the most raccoon hut you could possibly imagine. I love that. That was the best. I lived in a deserted wooden shack resort on an island in the Gulf of Thailand for a number of years as a rose garden. You ask Adam about it. So I saw 30 years into my life and the amount of hours that I was going to put on this. I almost barfed on my feet because I was not that guy. I was never that guy. The only time I had any real commitment and focus and attraction to something was in jujitsu. And that's part of the reason it was so painful when that whole thing stopped. I'd, you know, 6 years of like that, that was my thing. And yeah. And so definitely not in school. I was a horrible student, but this is like shit simple for me now.
Every time you tell that story, I magically see this movie of you in a hut, like in whatever the version of the pirate shorts
terrifying.
Is that, like, you know, before the pirate shorts existed, just like there's been in swim trunks or the tie pants, your hair's all crazy and you're sitting there typing. And then all of a sudden it's like you get like pushed back in your chair and your third eye opens and it's like
exactly glimpse it like.
into the ether.
Terrible. Sheer terror.
Eyes
that.
Wide, looking at it like, oh, like a raccoon caught.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like raccoons in the trash can and all of a sudden somebody puts a flashlight on and you're like, fuck.
Oh my God. It's like, yeah, I mean, I've heard you tell that story so many times and every single time the movie is the same in my eyes.
Yeah, that's exactly how it happened. Like, it was terrifying. Because again, I had no frame of reference for me to be that kind of person. And when your identity gets confronted so strongly like that, there's going to be some friction, some major friction.
Well, yeah, that's exactly, like, that's the first point that I wrote down when I wrote this topic is like wrestling with your identity and why I think that's one of the reasons why I think people throw in the towel when they get tough is they're not clear on their identity and they're in this constant fight with themselves over it. So I'll use myself as an example. Like I told you guys a little bit about my path. Like, am I a nutrition coach? If I'm a nutrition coach, then I have to act and behave this way. And if I'm going to go teach people about their mindset, like, oh, I need to have X, Y, and Z. Oh, wait, but this isn't really it. Like shiny object over here. Hold on. I want to teach, you know, sound healing. Like I never wanted to do that, but hey, maybe now that I have a sound sword. So it was like this thing of like, as you're learning what to do, it's kind of like this thing of like, oh, am I this? But oh, I'm that. We saw a lot of this with our students in BBU, right? Mm-hmm. Them wanting to teach many different things.
They're changing up the curriculum after they've already decided.
Yeah. A lot of things that like, it's like this kind of like wrestling with identity. I've also seen people, you know, do this like in the context of like, you know, having a professional identity, having a personal identity, and like they no longer match. Or, you know, if you get like friction in, it's like this, like the reason I like the word wrestling with identity is because it's like, oh, I'm this. No, I'm that. I'm this. I'm that. Wait, hold on. But are people seeing me like this? Oh, I don't want to be seen like this. I want to be seen like that. And that's all internal dialogue. That's like every day you wake up and you're not sure who you are and what you contribute to the conversation. And part of that is imposter syndrome, but that's a minimal part of it. The bigger part of it to me is what happens in the conversation when it's like, I'm not sure of myself. I haven't affirmed my own story, or I haven't found the thing that really lights me up yet. Like it's sort of this, but it's not that. Oh, you know what? If I can't do it all the way, like screw it, I'm out. And like, how often do you see people like go through that back and forth of, you know, is this really for me? Is this not for me? Like it's purely not about the thing. It's the internal dialogue of that.
Yeah. That's way more dangerous, destructive. That takes more people out of the game than any kind of external, you know, force or scenario. It's the same thing with teams. It's like Mickey Willis was talking about this. You know, it's not the outside force that gets you. It's the you know, the city that crumbles from within.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's the identity that crumbles from within. Those opposing forces, you know, if I'd never thought about it like this before. I mean, this is real time me talking out loud. That's a form of cognitive dissonance. Mm-hmm. You know, when you've got, I'm this kind of person or I'm that kind of person, I'm this kind of coach, I'm that kind of coach. Listen, y'all, if you want longevity in the game, at some point in time, you got to fucking choose.
Yeah, you just have to decide. You have to decide.
And you know what? Does that mean it's like, I'm assuming, I've never been married. I'm assuming it's a marriage. It's like, sometimes you're going to wake up next to that person. You're going to be like, what am I thinking? Okay. And sometimes it's going to be the best thing ever. And a lot of times it's going to be a mixed bag. And, you know, guess what? We agreed to this thing.
Well, even that, I mean, that's why I'm talking about like extrapolating this theme out or this topic out, which is like why people give in when things get tough. I mean, divorce rates are higher than ever. I heard a crazy stat. Tell us.
56% of marriages end in divorce and 20% minimum stay together for kids or financial reasons.
So we're saying basically 70% of people, 76% of people are unhappy.
Yeah.
And so yeah,
it didn't work. It's a failed 24%. It's a failed technology, 24%. And then
here's my question. Is it a failed technology or is it a failed mindset? Because this is where, and I'm not arguing for either direction, but what I see is that people really are struggling with the idea of staying in anything because there are so many options. We were talking about this in dating
just before
we started this conversation, right? Like the optionality in dating and how like long, you know, side note, but it's like this idea that like women's optionality is the best in their 20s when they're young and vibrant and men find them the most attractive. And then men's optionality is the greatest when they're like 35 to 50 because they're established, they can provide, they have all these things that are very attractive to women. They're more solid and secure in themselves. And so like the dynamic switches. And so it's like this concept of optionality becomes really interesting because that's linked to me with impatience. So it's like, or shiny object syndrome, like, oh, squirrel, here's another option for me. So I'm going to go over there. The grass might be greener on that side. And I'm impatient with letting this thing play out over here, or I've hit a point where I can no longer deal with it. So let me go over there and try this other thing. And how often this phenomenon, like it can be mirrored in relationships, in your business, in your hobbies, your interests, like it's rare now that people really like the difference between your interests, your passions, and your purpose.
Good one.
Like how much are we looking at things in our lives that could be our passion or our purpose and treating them like an interest?
Due to fear of commitment.
Yeah. Or just maybe not even fear of commitment, just unable to get the locked in mindset of how to commit to it.
Exactly. That's a very, there's a difference between why and how. If someone wants to commit to something and they've got a bunch of soft talk in their language, that's going to be somewhere between hard and impossible. Yeah.
And if you want to know what soft talk is, go to enlifted.me/soft talk and download the soft talk challenge. Just if you find yourself being indecisive, that's what you got to do.
Yeah. It's
just 7 days of support and email. Resource. Just do it.
Another thing is people think that progress is going to be linear.
Yes.
It's not going to be linear, which dovetails into, goes hand in hand with taking an L. If someone's bad at taking a loss, they're going to be likely to throw in the towel with whatever it is, whether it's a business or a marriage or
ego,
changing a diet,
component of ego,
whatever. Listen, progress is not linear. It's not linear. You know, you might quote unquote go backwards for 6 months, 3 quarters. What does your mind do when that happens? Because the L's are coming. The L's are coming. You're getting, life is, it's going to throw them at you and you're going to eat some of them. What do you do? What do you do when that happens? That's a big determinant of how someone, so if we look at what, if we're going to talk about, which is a great thing to talk about, what gets people to throw in the towel, what keeps people in the game?
Yeah.
Okay. What keeps people in the game? One thing that I also gets people to throw in the towel is relying on motivation and inspiration, because that shit is whimsical. It's like the weather. You can't control it. Oh, I've been really motivated lately. And part of me's like, cool. And then part of me's like, that sucks. Because guess what? That's going to end. And what do you do when that's going to end?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to wait till I'm going to listen to some things so I can get inspired. Again, discipline and curiosity mop the floor with inspiration and motivation. I do not run off of inspiration and motivation at all. I don't care for it. It's cool. I mean, okay, fine. Yay. You know, just high fives with your friends when you hit the numbers and all that, all those things and everything. And that is not what I fuel my day, my week, my year, my decade, my 50-year plan off of. Fuck that. No, it's discipline. I'm disciplined with this, and I'm also curious. What does it feel like, Kimmy? What does it feel like for you to take Getting Lifted to the top 1,000 podcasts in the world? What would that feel like?
Well, you know, it's interesting because in this conversation, so I'll answer the question first and then I'll say what I was going to say. So what it would feel like is a surprise and an accomplishment and also, of course. So mm-hmm. It would be this combination of holy shit and wow, I'm so proud of myself. And then, well, duh, because you've committed to this. Like, you know, the initial shock of it, I don't think you can take that away, but
wouldn't want to.
Like, yeah, that's part of the magic of it. That's part of the like excitement of it. But it would be if I looked back at what I've accomplished in it, which is showing up, putting in the reps and continuing to do it, and then iterating on that to make it better with every episode, better with every season, then of course I did the work other people aren't willing to do. And so I forgot what the thing was I was going to say, but whatever, it's irrelevant because I answered the question.
Yeah.
And you know, so much of what I do think is like, oh, I remember I actually did not ever set out to do this. Like this wasn't the thing that I was like, oh, I like that wasn't doing this show wasn't my goal. It was something that came in that I knew I could do for a result, which was marketing, which was to teach and educate and to lead and have it reach a lot more people. And I knew that would meet my goal. And then when I started doing it, I realized, oh man, I really like this. This is fun. And then I got to a point where I realized, oh wow, I beyond really like this. I like really like this. This is something that fits all of my interests from across my life in one capsule, which is to lead and teach, to speak my mind and tell people what I think.
Kimfowars.com.
Kimfowars.com. We got to buy that domain. And to have intellectual conversation and debate, because you know I studied philosophy in college. This and math.
Wow.
This conversations light me up. Understanding the inner workings of people's minds light me up. Understanding, like throwing ideas around in my mind. Rachel would say it's because my Venus is in Aquarius.
That's what I was going to say.
It's
obvious.
But it's very interesting to me. Like. To discuss and debate and to bring new and interesting innovative ideas to the forefront. So what I did, so because of the fact that I was enjoying it as much as I was supported as much as I was, and then I had affirmation from the listeners that this was something that they enjoyed too, this thing kept going. And we're just getting started.
Just get started.
This is, you know, we just set up the studio today.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Season three.
Exactly. And yeah, a lot of it is like, you know, it's like, I haven't gotten bored in this yet either.
I've never been bored once in my life with this work.
Yeah, I've definitely never been bored in an Lifted session. That's for damn sure. Or hanging out with you. You know, so, okay.
I've been called a lot of things. I've never once been called boring.
This is just a teaser plug. We do definitely need to tell them the story about the day, the you know what, coming back from the gun store. The most shocking and interesting conversation. We're not going to tell it right now because it's not part of this conversation, but we definitely need to tell that story.
Listen, this is your show. You just let me know when you want
to. It's a wild side note. We'll work it into the next episode. Maybe we'll just have it as like an intermission clip storytelling time. Wildest shit I've ever seen in my life. So anyway.
And we commentated it. that was even wilder. It was like we were commentating a baseball game.
Oh, man. So yeah. So, okay. So boredom, right?
I got a question.
Okay.
Did you ever think about quitting the podcast? Sincerely,
no.
Yeah. So you committed.
Yeah. Like I definitely have.
Listen, folks, there's going to be annoying shit. You could have your own business. You're going to get frustrated. You're going to get annoyed. You're going to not feel like doing it. You're going to get tired. You could have a 9-to-5 working at Target. You're going to get frustrated. You're going to get annoyed. You're not going to feel like doing it.
You're going to get more frustrated and annoyed if you work at Target. Shit.
Whatever you're feeling in it's that whole wherever you go, there you are thing. Whatever you're feeling in your business, you go get a job for somebody else and you're going to have generalized thematic stories and feelings. You're going to have the same feelings. It's like we got a friend who's looking for the perfect woman or the perfect peer group to hang out. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, well, that's the shiny object syndrome,
yeah.
Right? And the optionality is like, if I have too many options, paradox of choice, then I'm not going to pick any of them. And unfortunately, like, here's the thing, right? Like, you can go on and on and on in pursuit of this thing, and you're going to hit a point in time where if you look back at the last 10 years, or you look back at the last 20 years, or on your deathbed, you look back at your life and you're like, I've never committed to anything.
Ugh.
I never saw anything all the way through. You know,
I never took a chance. I never took real chance. I never bet on myself.
I've started over so many times that I actually don't know what it's like to finish.
You know,
which start over as many times as you need to, but when you hit one, stick to it.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, how many times can a person like truly fall in love in their life? I don't know what the answer to that is, but I think about it from time to time. Like, do you, would I trust somebody?
Truly? Like, I mean, it's probably like two or three max.
Probably.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if you met somebody that was married seven times, what are you going to think about them?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, well, I'm not going to be number eight.
Why not?
Because you clearly can't commit and you don't have, you know, you there's.
So what about the person who, you know, was in retail sales for 2 years and then opened a lube shop and then got into stop that.
What kind of lube?
Jiffy Lube. And then they got into, you know, they started an internet marketing business for 3 years. And then, you know, they grew soybeans for 2 years. Listen, here's another thing, everybody. You can't get good at something hopscotching around like that.
Exactly.
One of my main gripes with the NLP training that I had in 2011 and 2012, 5 day training in 2011. The man, Richard Band, Learn London. I was practitioner and then master practitioner the year later with him again, 7 days. Master practitioner in 12 days. You can't master anything in 12. You can't master anything in 12 years.
You can barely be a practitioner in 7 days. Like practice. We never talked about that part of your gripe with that. To practice something for 7 days, how freaking good could you be? If I learned a new skill and I practiced it for 7 days, I'm not going to be very good.
You know, there was no quality control. There was zero quality. It was a money grab. Okay. It was a money grab. And I knew that. Well, I figured that going in just because of how the thing was set up, and I didn't care. I just wanted to watch Richard Bandler work.
Yeah.
Because that guy is a legend.
Yeah.
And I went in there and I could have walked in, signed my name and walked out every morning. I could have been in that room for 10 minutes in line to sign my name and walk out and then gotten my diploma. No quality control. There's 1500 people in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's off on a tangent. Big picture.
Well, so this is actually a tangent, and there's an interesting point about this, which is quality over quantity.
Yeah.
How many times have you heard that phrase, right? Like it's, so
that's how we run our business.
Right. So if we're looking for in the game of quantity, which is the optionality, which is I have so many different options. I've done so many different jobs. I've had so many different partners and relationships. I've had quality is a whole different thing. Quality is depth. Quality is expertise. Quality is, maybe it's not mastery, but it's definitely in the pursuit of it. Quality
specialization.
Quality is I'm an expert. Quality is I really know this particular role very well. I know this particular person very well. I know how to do this thing incredibly well. Like we always are looking for somebody, like if you have a problem, you want to go to the specialist. You don't want to be in the place of like, oh, well, let me just go to the doctor that's, you know, actually had seven other careers.
Patient first, general practitioner walking in the door. It's like, who gets paid more? Who has more social status? It's the specialist. And it takes longer to become a specialist than it does a general practitioner.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many. There's like...
Breathing gets people to throw in the towel too. You know? Not poor breathing mechanics. I don't care what it is. If somebody's breath is trapped in their chest, you're going to drain your emotional gas tank. And that's a big part of... If you don't have the breath component, you can't control the pace.
True.
I'm going to say that again. If you don't have the breath component, you can't control your pace. I'm going to translate that. If you can breathe well, you can control your pace. Okay? And whether you got a 5-year goal, a 10-year goal, you're going to need gas in the tank to get her done. And the thing that burns more, it's not the external struggle that gets us. It's the internal struggle that gets us. Okay. You know, people can become quite flexible and resilient majorly. And that's reflected, of course, in the story that we tell ourselves. And then it's also, you know, reflected in how we breathe. And so, you know, a lot of why people throw in the towel is because their story's working against them. You know, take out you and put an I know what story I have to maintain to get this thing done in order for me to die well. I mean, I think about that a lot. It's like I'm wearing a little thing on my wrist, bracelet, memento mori, remember that you will die. I put that on every day. My ass is grass. I'm going to die. I'm toast. I'm not getting out of here alive. And I think about that shit all the time. And like, when that moment comes, whether I get smushed by a meteor, like a, or it's not gonna be a shark, because I don't like sharks, so stay out of the water. That's true. And or
what if we're on the yacht and you go overboard?
You know, when I'm checking out, I want to be able to look back on what I've done in a fraction of a second and go, cool. So I can leave here. I can leave here, right? And you know what's wild? You know what's cool? We've done such a damn good job with these certs. Like the word is out. The mm-hmm. word is out. There's enough. We're about to graduate 430 the student soon enough. And you know, I could go now and be satisfied. I really could. And I'm committed to 50 years total. I'll be 80. What do you think I'm gonna look like when I'm 80 years old?
That's gonna be interesting. You're gonna turn into like, you're gonna be like equally menacing, but probably like a sweet little old man. Like you'll get softer and you'll get more wild.
That sounds fun.
Okay, bye.